championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Darius Terrell. You guys are listening to the Hornscast. That's the Hornscast show on any podcasting platform out there. Today we're going to be going over what just happened in Fort Worth for Texas versus TCU as the Longhorns fall there. Where the blame lies, does it lie with the coaches or with the players? But before that, get into the NCAA's reaction to the Fair Pay-to-Play Act. What do we think is going to look like, and what do we want to see in it? And then we're going to end it off by talking about the future of the program. This bye week coming up, there's potential for a lot of chaos in the locker room. What changes do we think need to happen in the short term to save this season and in the long term to save the program? Darius, bud, how's it going?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How you doing? How you
Tough
doing?
Tough weekend, man. It was not a fun game to watch.
No, definitely not fun. Not fun for Texas fans, not at all. You know, you knew it was going to be another tough one, like most of these Big 12 games are going to be. Matter of fact, like all of them are going to be the rest of the way. And, yeah, it was disappointing, very disappointing.
But we'll get into that later. We'll get into that later. Let's go ahead and start off here by getting into some current events that before you came on the show we talked about over the summer when the Fair Pay to Play Act was just kind of in its nascent stage, and California was starting to come up with this concept, and it really looked like it had a chance, and then it actually happened. The governor signed off on it, and California's government gave the NCAA fair warning. Now, the NCAA tried to say, oh, this is an existential crisis, and BS us about the fact that if this goes through, it's going to be the downfall of their entire organization. Nobody fell for it. In fact, more state governments start to put the iron to the NCAA. So the NCAA yesterday being Tuesday, decided that they're going to allow or start to allow the players to benefit from their names, likenesses, and images. That is what they are starting to do for all three levels of NCAA sports. Darius, what's your initial reaction to this news? Too late for you?
Well, I mean, yeah, selfishly, of course, anybody you start hearing about money, you know, things like that, yeah, you want a piece of that. But honestly, when I hear it, you know, sounds great and everything, but when I really cut down, you know, to the teeth of it, they're saying they're allowing folks to make profit off their likeness. That's still different from the NCAA actually paying the players, paying their employees, which is what the players are, their employees. So the NCAA is still not paying, guys. I think what they're doing is, you know, putting up a front saying, okay, yeah, we agree. Well, you can profit off your likeness, things like that. But I think it's not really a step in the right direction. They didn't have a real choice with this, with California and all these other states stepping in ready to push their hand. They didn't really have a choice with this, in my opinion. You know, when we start getting into it, how will it affect people? How will it affect the game? I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see how they try to police this thing. You know, what are the limitations on it, everything like that. But, you know, that's their problem. So I'm very interested to see how this works out.
I disagree with you. I think it is a step in the right direction. It is a move to giving the players more benefits for what they do. Yes, they are not yet called employees. In fact, the NCAA is making sure of it. In the press release they gave out, they said they need to make sure that these players are not employees, which I can definitely see, you know, the positives and negatives of. Here's one negative. I know a lot of people hear me say that. What? There's negatives? There's one small negative, and it is the fact that if they are employees, then I wonder what happens with the scholarships.
The NCAA can no longer parade around and call themselves a nonprofit while bringing in more money than anything else in freaking America. That's what it is. That's not... I don't know how they're going to have very much power moving forward. Not in 2 years, 3 years, but when we start really getting into this thing, if you really think about it, NCAA is going to cave on a lot of things.
Yeah, no, the NCAA is definitely a paper tiger at this point. It has been since the 90s, probably. and people started figuring that out in the last 10 years. But I think that there are a few things that are going to happen with this that are both football related and not. I think the Olympic sports, that being track, that being whatever is a non-profit sport, or like a not a huge profit sport, it's really going to affect them. And in a positive light, being that now these players don't have to leave college to make a profit. When they are able to be the most marketable, they're able to now make money. That, I think, is a huge positive that's going to come out of this. People like Michael Phelps won't have to leave Michigan to go and make money. People like Simone Biles won't have to skip college altogether. That's a positive that's going to come out of this, is not just for, you know, football and basketball. Obviously, there are going to be some big deals there, but it's going to be for the people who are, you know, actually, this is the only time that they can really make money.
I mean, I agree that it's a positive for those Olympic sports and things like that. But the thing is, the main meat of this, the crux of this, they're focusing, it's about football and it's about basketball players being paid or not. That's what it really comes down to. I mean, all the other stuff, again, yeah, it affects other people, but I mean, it's really window dressing for what the main issue is. And it's, they want to continue to keep those two major sports from being paid how they should be, when in reality, a student athlete, if you go through that schedule, okay, you're not able, all you're living off of is that scholarship check.
Right.
When I was in college, you're not going to eat free food every day in the training table. That's not a real thing. That's not realistic. You're on a strict schedule. You're working out at 5 in the morning. You've got class from 8 to 2, okay? You've got film from 2:30 to 3:30. You've got practice from 4 to 7. Then you've got study hall from 7:45 to 9:30. All of your time is accounted for. You're not free. You're not able to be a human being. You're not a regular student. So to continue pretending like, oh, you're getting a free education, you're not getting a free education. You can't even major in what you want to major in, because if your butt misses practice, guess who's going to lose their scholarship? You are. It's been a facade for far too long. And I'm really, really interested to see and watch the wheels fall off of this thing, in my opinion.
No, I get that. I understand that these players are more employees, that the NCAA is honestly taking advantage of some of these players. But I think this is a step in the right direction. This is a way to get athletes the money that they generate. It is a huge avenue for players to make money. It is honestly one of the biggest things it was an issue for me, was these players not being able, you know, when I'm little Will going and buying a Vince Young jersey, Vince Young saw none of those profits. You, if I buy a Darius Terrell jersey when I'm little Will.
That's the thing, and, though. Nobody is going to buy a Darius Terrell jersey. It doesn't affect guys like me at all. Okay, it affects, yeah, Vince Young. It's only going to affect how many college football Division I teams are? 132. It's going to affect maybe 20 schools. And out of those 20 schools, 18 of them is going to be the quarterback. It's not really going to affect that many people, especially in the game of football, in my opinion. Basketball is a little bit different. You can see those guys' faces all the time. But football, that likeness thing, that recognition, that fame, that really only goes to a guy that's a quarterback. I have a hard time seeing a guy like, who's that at Ohio State, defensive, Chase Young. I have a hard time. Nobody knows what Chase Young looks like. I have a hard time seeing him making the kind of money that Justin Fields is going to make, for example. I think it's really going to only affect quarterbacks and people at Maine, at the major programs like Alabama, like Clemson. It's going to give them just another bigger advantage than they already have, in my opinion.
Right. But again, it might be an incredibly small step, but it is a step nonetheless in the right direction. Now, here's the thing. Here's probably what the NCAA's rulings are going to look like. In my understanding of what's going to happen, it's not going to be like they have free rein to their image and likeness. The NCAA is still going to try, like a business, to do what's in their best interest and not the interest of what they see as unpaid labor. They're probably going to allow players to benefit from their names in general and not in specific. That means getting royalties from the sales of jerseys and autographs sold by the NCAA and school-approved vendors. but they're probably not going to allow students to go out and just go to a car dealership and say, yes, you're allowed to set up and sell your autographs through that. They're probably going to allow players to do commercial deals, but they're going to be very strict. They're able to do these commercials, but unless it's with the school's sponsors, it probably won't be allowed. So like a player going to Texas who is a Nike school partnering with Adidas,
and something like that. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's just, they're not really still able to do their own thing. Like you're saying, there's not, it's pretending still. They're still pretending, if that makes sense. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it's still publicly, all players can do this. No, in reality, you still can't. Very, 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 very few of y'all will actually be able to benefit off of this. And nothing's really going to change from our bottom line as the NCAA, if that makes sense. That's what I'm trying to get it.
Right, no.
But no.
Okay, I get that. And it's stuff like that. So they're going to be very careful with the deals that they go through. And they're probably going to want to keep off the drawbacks of controversial sponsorships, i.e. what happened with Colin Kaepernick. And the thing is, with all of this, all of these changes, you're still going to have the big schools going around these restrictions by paying players via boosters and bagmen, you know, using the classic church to funnel or launder money to players. It's going to still be there. And in fact, these players are probably going to get the right to an agent. And it's going to be a school-approved agent. And I wonder what school the under-the-table deals... agent. Right. I wonder what the under-the-table deals are going to be with these agents. And honestly, the recruiting advantages that different schools are going to try to bring up with these agents. If you come to my school, you get the Baser Chevy dealership. We have this sponsorship lined up for you, Mr. Five-Star Recruit. I wonder if that's going to work. That's going to be an interesting thing that we're going to be seeing here. I think that's going to be an interesting recruiting pitch that's going to happen, whether or not the NCAA allows it.
Some people's feet are about to get held to the fire, and I'm just going to enjoy sitting back watching the entire show. I think this has a chance to get really, really fun as far as college football being the NFL's minor league and things like that. I think 10 years from now, this thing is going to be college football as we know it has a chance to be completely different.
Oh, for sure. I completely agree. I think that was what the start of that California bill was starting. I kind of talked about that in the summer, where this bill has the chance to change college football as we know it. These are the small steps right now that are happening, but there will be some bigger steps happening as more and more governments start to come out and be in favor of the NCAA. Because what do Republicans and Democrats love to come together to do? They love to come together and bash the NCAA because the Democrats see it as unpaid labor and the Republicans see it as unfair business practices by curtailing competition. They can stop butting heads for a second and just smash the NCAA. They love to do that. So we're probably going to see that more and more and more as there's more bipartisan works to curtail the strength of the NCAA. Let's go ahead and talk about, though, Texas, because that's what most people here are listening to the show for, is understanding what's going on with Texas right now, especially after Texas lost to TCU this past weekend. TCU, a team that Texas really should have beaten pretty handedly. They're not a good team. Yes, they beat Texas, but Texas is really struggling right now. So let's go ahead and break down what exactly happened here. And we'll start off with the offense, because the offense was honestly the most to blame for what happened last Saturday. Darius, it was really, again, for both sides of the ball, a tale of two halves. You had a pretty explosive first half for the Longhorns, and then the second half happened. There is, you know, just a lot of different things that happened that were on Texas offense-like in this TCU game. They only had 3 points off of turnovers. They went 2 for 5 in the red zone with 10 points, and they just really fell apart in the second half. Where does the blame lie? Is it with the coaches or the players?
Just to focus on that second half, like you talked about, By my count, there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Texas saw 17 first down plays in the second half, okay? This is Texas's success on those plays, okay? The first one, Will, hit 4 yards, incompletion, 4 yards, incompletion, 1 yard, 1 yard, 2 yards, incompletion, loss of 3 yards, incompletion, incompletion, okay? It's not until the 11th first down play of the second half where Texas gets the first down on a 10-yard scramble by Sam Ellinger, okay? Next play, next first down.
Yeah, on the first 11 starts of the drives, there's three.
The biggest play is 4 yards, 4 yard gain.
Yeah, I would call that a quote unquote success where they're still on schedule, but there's only three of those within the first 11 first downs.
And the two that they got, the two first downs that they got were both scrambles by Sam Ellinger, and that was followed up by incompletion, 3 yard run, incompletion, incompletion. So what you're doing is on first down, okay, Texas is they're off schedule, okay? They're off schedule like we just talked about 90% of the time. Okay, and they were usually following up that first down play with a quick hurry up lineup. I don't know if they thought they were trying to catch TCU off guard or what, but every time Texas goes up tempo, what are they doing? They're handing the ball off or throwing a bubble. So on second down, they get stuffed. So now seems like every time I looked up in the second half, Texas is in 3rd and 8, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 12. That now means TCU can go ahead and sit back, play their coverage, their man coverage, but they were bringing pressure even though they weren't getting a ton on Ellinger. But what that was doing, and then Kay Brewer's out. Kay Brennan Eagles didn't play because he's suspended. Unofficially, right? We don't know what happened there. Take that back. Brent Eagles didn't play.
We don't know what happened. It was personal reasons, okay?
Right.
Per the staff, it was personal reasons.
Right. So no Eagles, no Brewer. So you got Reese Leitau out there 70% of the time when Texas is going split out with 4 players. So that's really 3 guys going up against, I don't know, 7 guys in the secondary. That's how you lead to Sam, staring guys down, forcing balls. That's where those turnovers come from. Okay, they didn't. Texas wasn't, the players weren't put in a position to be successful. So to answer your question, my blame for the game Saturday falls on the coaching staff. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. It was very vanilla play calls and very predictable play calls. Now, and the thing is, with those vanilla play calls, you can probably win with that as long as you stick to your base, which is getting the 4 yards on your first down, probably through the run, and they were unable to establish the run in that second half.
They abandoned it.
Exactly, they abandoned it. And it was a large part due to only getting 16 rushing yards on 9 carries in that third quarter. But the problem wasn't that the players weren't executing. It was they ran the same 3 plays every single time. With Rashawn Johnson, it was the counter. And then with Keyonte Ingram, it was the inside zone. And then the extension of the run game, the bubble, to the outside. So they really didn't try much out there. They didn't adjust when they were found out. It really caused an imbalance in this offense, which caused the Longhorns to be off schedule. And it just all snowballed from there. Once they were off balance with the run game, the passing game really wasn't successful outside of 2 players. And once TCU covered those guys, they weren't playing left-handed. They were playing with no arms.
TCU knew what to expect. Folks talk about the huge talent advantages and things like that, man. I don't know how much I buy into that. Because when I looked out there, I watched that game Saturday. I saw Jalen Reagor out there breaking guys down. I saw Tay Barber running by, quote-unquote, 5-star Tyler Owens. I saw Jeff Gladney covering Colin Johnson. So I don't know if I'm buying that Texas was really that much more talented than TCU on Saturday either. There's more that goes into football players than just a ranking that's attached to them, usually by a lot of guys that didn't even play the game. So I think there's a lot of false hope being put on the shoulders of this Texas roster a little bit too. I don't know if they're really that much more talented than everybody they're playing. I really don't.
I would say that maybe if you put them on the track or in the weight room, perhaps. But when it comes down to fundamentals, which are a huge part of this game, TCU far outplays Texas in that role. I think the real difference was coaching here. Like you said, these players who may be better in terms of their, you know, track time or whatever, weren't put in a position to succeed. The offensive line actually performed pretty decent. You wouldn't think about that. You wouldn't see that. But they looked really good at times. TCU's front, which has a Ross Blacklock and Corey Bethley, they only got two tackles for losses and one sack. Mm-hmm. And that sack was honestly on Sam Ehlinger for holding onto the ball forever. It was a coverage sack. So that offensive line did a great job, but they were not helped out by play calling, especially in the run game. If you're blocking for the same three plays over and over and over again, the defense is at some point going to realize, oh, this is where this is going, then play to that advantage. You can't beat bodies. You can't beat numbers there. So if TCU brings more numbers to the position where you're running, then they're going to beat you. That's just football. That's what happened. There's no help with misdirections. There's no help with adjustments at the run game and the play calling. It was just very predictable. And you can't do that against Gary Patterson, who is known to be a great defensive mind.
Anybody that's been watching this team this year, last year, basically for the last two seasons, Texas is extremely tendency heavy with what they do. You know, certain situations. I bet if we pulled up a chart, if we did the math, if we paid somebody in Pro Football Focus or something to do the math, you would know there's a high probability in certain situations of what Texas is going to do. And it basically looked like in that second half, like Gary Patterson, you know, had a headset on. It's like he swapped with somebody on the Texas sideline. He knew what was coming on every play. His guys were confident. They weren't guessing. They weren't thinking. They were just reading and reacting. And I think that makes a difference, especially when you start looking at, you know, Texas maybe thinking too much. When you see a guy like Jake Smith dropping a wide open punt where he looked like he had a lot of room to run. You know, that's a national player of the year, right? Gatorade player of the year. He instincts, playing in the backyard, catching the punt. That's what he's done his whole life. He can't catch a punt. We can't fail the punt. We can't fail the kickoff return all of a sudden because guys are thinking too much. That falls on the coaching staff.
Yeah, and on top of this, all of this, this Texas team hasn't adjusted to what the defense is called since probably the West Virginia game. No, probably Oklahoma State game. And maybe even before that, they weren't able to do anything in terms of adjustments. And it's not like the offense has been hampered with injuries like the defensive side. Darius, us being part of the Football Brainiacs, we obviously get information from the Oklahoma side, where we get to hear little nuggets about what's happening at Oklahoma. And Oklahoma coaches were surprised at how Texas did not adjust to their defensive line in the second half. So why did Sam Ehlinger get sacked 9 times against OU? Because the offensive line didn't adjust, so Oklahoma didn't have to adjust and just kept on bringing what they were bringing before. Things like that. It's just now it bit Texas in the butt. On top of all of this, the penalties killed Texas. Every single time Texas had a positive play, it seemed to be wiped out by a penalty. Keontae Ingram had 2 15-yard runs, both brought back by holding penalties by both of the guards. You can't come back from that. And once you're behind schedule, it's a huge positive for the defense.
And you know what that looks like, Will? You know what those are signs of? That's signs of an undisciplined team. For all the stuff that gets preached, the culture, the P charts, all of this stuff, you know, you're starting to see stuff pop up. And it's not stuff popping up. Penalties have been going on all season long. Practice isn't matching what's being preached. So, you know, you start to wonder, you know, how effective is the message? You know, is it just for show? You know, what's really going on?
And I think we'll get into that later, where I don't think the message is really sitting with these players very well. But let's go ahead and talk about one of the players who has been a model player, honestly, having one of the worst games he has ever had as a Longhorn, Sam Ehlinger. Man, Sam Ehlinger had a bad game. Sam Ehlinger in the first half, 211 yards, 41 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. But then you go to the second half, 110 yards total, 3 interceptions. But honestly, I don't know how much of it is on Sam Ehlinger. 2 of those interceptions, the first 2, honestly, were on the wide receivers. But the last 2 are probably why I think Sam Ehlinger had such a bad game. It is frustration. Sam Ehlinger was frustrated. You could tell at the very end of that game, that last pick he threw, he was just trying to make something happen because nothing was there. TCU understood that they weren't doing anything. There were no adjustments. They only had 2 wide receivers who combined for almost 300 yards passing. The run game wasn't happening because Texas wasn't adjusting to what TCU was doing. And in the end, frustration happened. Sam Ehlinger just couldn't, you know, if it wasn't there, there's nothing there. And so what is he supposed to do?
We saw him scramble a few times. I personally was getting frustrated watching the game, wondering why he didn't use his legs more, because it seemed like every time he did step up in the pocket and take off, he easily was picking up 10, 12, 13 yards every time. The only thing in my head, all I could think of is maybe he's still banged up. I think we talked about a rib injury earlier in the season, but I wanted him to use his legs more. TCU wasn't taking that away. Similar to kind of how we've seen Texas do this season. Texas hasn't been able to stop the quarterback scramble, quarterback run. I thought that was effective for Ellinger in the game Saturday, and I didn't think he used it enough. Again, we've talked about it, you know, so far on this podcast, but at the same time, he was not being put in a position to be very successful. So, you see a guy out there trying his hardest, trying to improvise without, you know, exposing himself to taking too many shots as well. You see things getting forced. You see turnovers. You see Texas go up to Fort Worth and fail to accomplish what SMU could.
Yeah, you're right. One of the big numbers that comes out of that is that four picks. And if I'm going to break that down real fast, the first one is on Devin Duvernay, and the second one is on Jake Smith. Both of those were poor, poor routes, especially Jake Smith's.
Jake Smith looks like he doesn't have any confidence right now to me. He really shouldn't be out there on the field, in my opinion. But who else do they have to put out there? And if they don't play Jake Smith, then, you know, you got that whole portal thing going on. So he's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know, Texas is in a precarious position right now. This thing can go one of two ways over these next 8 to 10 days.
Yeah, you're right. So let's get to the defense, though. Again, another tale of two halves here. The first half, they held TCU to 13 points, 93 passing yards, 92 rushing yards. And the only thing that really hurt them was a blown coverage by, I think, the fourth string safety that cost them a touchdown because he didn't commit to knocking down the pass or going after the pass. It was a cover two. They went over the middle where they're supposed to go, and he just didn't make the play. It was there that at the very end of that first half that Orlando, you start to see very predictable blitzes, his calling card when he tries to bring pressure, when he starts to doubt himself. You start to see some very predictable blitzes. You saw, I think, three cornerback blitzes in a row that were called out by TCU in a row. You saw them obviously bringing pressure from the linebackers. The defensive line does what they're supposed to do. They create the holes, but the linebackers cannot get through those holes quick enough. What happens? Orlando brings these predictable blitzes from 7 yards out. They do not stop doing this throughout the rest of the game, and TCU realizes that they can trick Texas into these favorable positions by giving them favorable pre-snap reads. Oh, it's a, you know, first down and 10, so this is supposed to be a run play. So what are we going to do? We're going to show run and then pass it over their heads, right? That's what happened with the Jalen Reagor touchdown. It was a 5-man run blitz. Deshaun Jameson was then lined up one-on-one with Jalen Reagor, played it like he had safety help, and the end result is a touchdown. Little things like that, where Todd Orlando was tricked into a play call based on a pre-snap read.
Well, I'm just going back again to talking about coaches putting players in the best position to be successful, right? You just talked about Todd Orlando losing confidence, guessing, right? We're guessing. We're throwing stuff up on the wall, see what sticks, right? All right, remind me, last week we were talking about Kansas, right? Kansas game. That whole fourth quarter, Texas had a walk-on, right, out there in the nickel. He played the whole fourth quarter. Okay, did Mason Ramirez play at all this past Saturday?
No.
No, okay. Did Tyler Owens play on defense at all last week?
No.
No. Looking at that game, I think Tyler Owens might have played every freaking snap this past week, right? Okay. How can Tyler Owens play the whole game this past Saturday, but he wasn't good enough to come in place of a walk-on last week in the whole fourth quarter? That doesn't make any sense to me. How are you as a coaching staff? How are you either one, didn't put your best players out there in the situation, or you don't have guys prepared enough. You don't have enough confidence in the guys that should be out there because you didn't rep them in practice to be out there in situations. That makes no sense to me at a place like University of Texas. Okay. How can any of these guys have any confidence in anything that gets called and who's supposed to be doing what when we can't even, You don't even did Byron Vaughns play at all this past week against who did they just play? Because I'm going blank. TCU. I'm starting to see red. TCU. I thought Byron Vaughns played pretty dang good against Kansas. Did he not?
He played great.
He goes from that to not seeing a single snap. He didn't see a single snap on defense against TCU. What the heck? I can't imagine what the players are thinking right now, because it looks like the coaches are just throwing. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. They're guessing. They're lost. And then there's no transparency in the program. Tom Herman's not going to give you anything in the press conference. So what that's going to lead to is more questions being asked, more heat being turned up in the kitchen on all of them, because it looks like they don't know what they're doing. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. And it sounds like inside the program, there's not great communication between the coaches and the players. So the players are, again, unsure of what the coaches are actually thinking, and thus second guessing what the calls are and what they're supposed to do and their own abilities.
Players are a reflection of their coaches. At the end of the day, that's who they're around 24/7, how they take the field, how they come off the field, how they go through everything. Everything the players do, whether they realize it or not, is what their coaches have ingrained in them. So what we're seeing right now is what they have been being given to them by the folks that are on the coaching staff in charge of getting them prepared to play. So if we're going as bad as it was during the Charlie Strong era, which it was bad, we're seeing similar type of stuff right now.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, the players played fairly well with limited personnel. Now, there
I thought
are some
the defense did. Yeah, I thought they did.
The defensive line dominated. I mean, Keandre Coburn looked great. Malcolm Roach killed it.
Yeah.
Daquan Graham was serviceable again. The linebackers and the defensive backs, it was a little up and down. You know, the linebackers really couldn't set the edge. They couldn't get any penetration. But they did all right against the run early on. And that's, you know, when they had confidence in themselves. The defensive backs looked okay. Tyler Owens had some trouble. Deshaun Jameson had some trouble early on. Montrell Estell, obviously, they all had bad games. I mean, Deshaun Jameson didn't know what call he was in. Tyler Owens, again, against Tay Barber, who I was fully on board. I was like, this kid is going to be good. And Texas staff didn't think so. He's now at TCU, costing you games.
You had to, who was that? The first touchdown TCU scored to the tight end coming into the game. I wrote about it in the deal. KYO, his name is Pro Wells. Only year he had 7 catches, right, on the whole year coming in. 4 of them were touchdowns. His longest catch was 14 yards. That means guess who's getting the ball in the red zone? Probably that guy. Of course, the tight end goes right up the scene. Montrell Estell was what, third, fourth string safety heading into this year? Mm-hmm. But he's been playing, right? He's been playing. How can I casually look up statistics on TCU and know that the tight end is somebody we need to watch out for in the red zone, but the freaking tech, the players aren't prepared? That doesn't make sense to me, Will.
Right.
It don't make sense. And I can't even be mad at Tyler Owens, because he hasn't been trusted to be on the field at all on defense outside of the few throwaway snaps, Rice and Louisiana Tech. Then all of a sudden he's playing the whole game at TCU. Like, I can't even be mad at him, because how can he be prepared? How can he?
And I think part of the problem is Todd Orlando is grasping at straws at who can play what position at this point in the season, because it is an honest point. They are broken when it comes to the players in their injuries. There are so many safeties right now that, again, you're playing your fourth string safety as your number one safety. You're playing, you know, you're having to shove in guys who really didn't play. You know, Deshaun Jameson was an offensive player last year. Now he's your starting cornerback. You're replacing so much talent, and then you're replacing talent on top of that. It is a huge issue that Todd Orlando is facing, and possibly what might save his ass this year. But it's still the fact that these players are this far in the season, and it looks like they're regressing. And I'm guessing that regression is based on a lack of confidence in Todd Orlando at this point, and a lack of confidence not just in Todd Orlando, but their own position coaches. Obviously, there was some drama in the cornerback room last week between Anthony Cook and Deshaun Jameson. It's stuff like that, and then you're starting to second guess who this guy who's coaching me. What does he actually know?
Why can't one of those corners play the freaking nickel?
Right, exactly.
No. Why can't they all be on the field, especially with all these safeties out?
Right.
Why not? That doesn't make any sense, Will.
And it seems like in the Todd Orlando defense, these players are learning plays and not positions, which is why they're able to cross train so easily, is because if you're a defensive tackle or your defense, you know, Malcolm Roach, who was a defensive end, goes to linebacker because he doesn't have to learn how to play linebacker. He just has to understand his responsibilities during a certain play call. It's as simple as that. And, you know, it worked well this first year. It worked well because it started, you know, players had confidence. The players had confidence in what Todd Orlando was doing and the message. Started out to, you know, started getting better last year as the players started to get more confidence. But this year, it just seems like these players are starting to question what's going down when Todd Orlando throws a zero blitz on 3rd-and-17 and 3rd-and-14, and then it bites them in the butt for 2 touchdowns. And then you just lose the confidence of every player on that defense because of, you know, you just don't learn from the lesson. But at the same time, if you're Todd Orlando, on that 3rd-and-17 call, you're dropping back, 8 players? And it's still a touchdown. You bring everybody and it's still a touchdown. What are you supposed to do? You know, it's sort of a vicious cycle here. The players aren't executing, and it causes the coaches to second guess what's happening, which again makes the players lose confidence, which causes these big plays, and it's just a vicious cycle. Vicious
everybody's cycle. Everybody's thinking. Nobody's playing. Nobody's reacting. Nobody's calling any games off instincts. None of the kids are playing off instincts as everybody's thinking.
Right.
There's no trust either way.
Right. So I think that's the big problem here is the defense started to lose confidence towards the end, and they just kept on getting thrown back onto the field after the offense was sputtering. And then the big plays that happened started to cause the defense to spiral more and more and more. And everybody, right, was thinking too much. Now Texas gets the second bye week, which is a rarity. It can be a good thing or a bad thing. And the good thing is they're getting back a lot of players. Now, while you did lose Cade Brewer, who's undergoing ankle ligament repair surgery.
Oh, wow.
You're getting back Foster. You're getting back Overshown. You're getting back Whittington. You're getting back McCulloch. You're getting back Stearns. So 3 safeties are back. And those are 3 big names. Basically. 3 big names. You're getting back McCulloch, who is a big name for your linebacking core. Whittington is bringing you some difference in that running back room. Thompson's still a few weeks away, and Bushevsky's likely to return for the season. Oh, my God. Yeah, losing Bushevsky. Oof. He was probably the only guy who was consistent in the special teams for the past few games.
Yeah, he's quietly having a pretty good season.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the good. You're getting back a lot of players for Kansas State. And that's going to be necessary for improving your defense. You know, little things like the 3rd-and-17, probably you could have stopped that if you have Caden Stearns in that position instead of Montrell Estell. That's probably not a touchdown. Caden Stearns is a lot more instinctive than Montrell Estell is.
All right.
Probably picks that off, actually. Now, the bad parts of this bye week, or, you know, what could go either way. There is potential for chaos in this locker room that needs to be averted by Tom Herman. The players are not buying this message, and it's causing guys like Brennan Eagles to skip practice and other players throughout the past week there's other players who threaten to skip practice. There's guys who are threatening to go in the portal as early as this next week. There's a lot of potential chaos that could happen over this bye week for Tom Herman. He needs to find a way to make these players believe again. And that's going to have to happen through better communication between the staff and the players and an understanding. Tom Herman's going to have to rally the players who are his captains. Colin Johnson, get Sam Ellinger, get Devin Duvernay to have some sit-downs with these players who are unhappy and are not buying this message and sit down and say, y'all, we need to do this for such and such reason. We need to have a certain message that is bought through this team, because right now you have a lot of players who are unhappy, and that's okay. At certain times you can have some bad or angry characters in the locker room at times, but the fact that there are so many that it seems like it's a mob of characters causes a snowball effect where one guy who wasn't angry before starts to be picked up by the snowball that is rolling downhill.
Football, there's no sport that makes you put in, you know, more practice, you know, more work behind the scenes, right, than football. Nothing goes more into any sport than football. All the film, all the weights, all the practice. You only get to play one game every week, and you're only playing 3-4 months out of the year, right? So when you're putting in all this work, you know, all these, you know, you're getting told things are going to happen. This is going to pay off. This is going to happen. You know, this is going to happen. You're going to do this, okay? So then when we get to the season and, you know, those moments of truths happen and they don't go your way, you know, you start looking at the folks who you bought into that told you, you know, it would go that way. And we did it your way. We did what you asked, exactly how you asked, and we didn't get the result we were looking for. I think you have to be careful. And I mean, it's too late now, but, you know, as a coach, your message, you know, once you put it out there, you can't take it back. You got to stick with it. You got to go with it. So when you come in and say, you're going to win if you do this, you're going to do this, this is going to happen if you do this, and then it doesn't happen, you got to be able to look in the mirror, and adjust yourself too. Obviously, I don't know Coach Herman personally. I know folks that have played for him that talked to me about him before, you know, before he ever became the head coach at Texas. But he only did 2 years at Houston, right? He only did 2 years at Ohio State. He's still growing as a head coach. And I don't know, you know, at the University of Texas, if that's really, you don't need a coach that's growing. And, you know, really, I just think they've got to do an overhaul. If there are guys that want to leave right now, and this is prior to this past weekend, I mean, they were 5-2 heading into the game, well, 3-1 in the conference. All their goals prior to this weekend were still there for them. Okay, if there are guys that are talking about leaving, they want to jump off the boat, honestly, with the guys like that, I think you're better off without them anyway. Okay, because they've made it clear that even though you got everything ahead of you, all your goals are still up there as a team, it's not about the team for them. It's about themselves, the individual. Football's the ultimate team sport. You're not going to have success if, you know, the defense is complaining because the offense is not scoring enough points, or the offense is complaining because the defense won't get a stop, or a special team, somebody misses a block here. You got to have, even though you'll never have everybody on the same page, you got to have enough guys out there that have the same goal, they're thinking the same way. And it's clear that Texas doesn't have that going on right now. It will never look good to see a mass exodus of guys, you know, 3-4 guys leaving at one time. But as far as Texas and this season, that probably, in my opinion, would be one of the best things that could happen, even though, you know, that won't happen. There's got to be a change in the message. You know, I always hear, or what I've been hearing about recently, you know, hearing with the Patriots, Bill Belichick, things like that, is focus on the process, not the result. Because, you know, like you said, you can get frustrated. You get, you know, you lose faith if you, again, we just talked about it. You've been told that all this stuff will happen and it doesn't happen. The result didn't happen. Screw this, right? Okay, get caught up in the process. What am I doing in the weight room? Am I doing this correctly? Are we doing this in the film? Are we making this correction? So that if you're handling everything that comes with the process, you don't have to worry about that end result, because that'll take care of itself. You know, so maybe the message hasn't paid off. It's time for a new message. And Tom Herman, for his sake, it can't be a new messenger. So he's got to retool. He's going to have to retool. It's going to go one of two ways. We'll see what happens. But he is a learning coach. He is a growing coach,
right,
in a position that can't really, no, they're tired of that. Texas fans are tired of that.
Right. Which I kind of brought that up when they hired Tom Herman. One of my fears was Texas fans are going to have to watch a coach that is learning on the job. Texas was putting a lot of faith in the fact that Tom Herman could do it fast enough and well enough. It seems to be that we're going to find out whether or not he can make a veteran move as a 5-year head coach. There's two parts that are to this. Changes that need to be made in this week and long term. So short term, to save his season, you're right. You know, maybe you change the message to something that's not drastically different, but it focuses more on the process. Focus less on the result of TCU. Focus more on the process. That if they still work hard, there's a chance they make it to the Big 12 championship. They did lose to Oklahoma State last year. They still made it to the Big 12 championship. There's still a chance, right? There's things like that. He can save the season. Now, I'm interested in seeing if he needs to have different messengers out there, you know, when it comes to his staff. That's definitely something that's going to happen long term. There is definitely going to be some guys that they're going to have to chop off the program because they're not doing their job. If you go to thefootballbrainiacs.com, our donor board, we kind of give you a little bit more talk about who those guys specifically are. But there are definitely quite a few, you know, I'd say three or four coaches that are looking to be let go because they're not either doing a good job of communication between the players or teaching these players at all.
And those coaches who have one foot out the door, you know, you got to be right. careful. What are they saying to players? You know, what is their body?
Right. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see exactly that, you know, which coaches do you go out? You know, do you chop? I think maybe you take a look at your coordinator position, you know, hey, just because right now Tom Herman is very much involved in the coordinator position, which gives you a 7-4 unbalanced look for your defense and your offense. You have 7 offensive coaches basically to 4 defensive coaches. Something needs to change there. That's a long-term solution. That's how, you know, something that saved the program. Short-term, you have to get these players focused. You have to turn these players around and stop being angry. You have to get some communication between the players and the coaches. And if those coaches and those players aren't on the same pages, do it yourself. This is your program. You have to figure out how to get these players on the same page, how to get the communication going. Force it if you have to, but get it going. That was a huge problem. That's been a huge problem. And a reason why the things turned so bad so fast is the lack of communication between players and coaches. It's okay when you're winning, when you're beating Kansas by, you know, a sufficient amount, when you're not losing to TCU. But as soon as things start to look bad and these players can't turn to these coaches and feel comfortable in what's going on, then things are going to start to take a turn. And, you know, you can't be Nick Saban without a player's coach here and there. Texas doesn't really look like they have that many as well. So we'll see. You know, short term, you have to save the season with getting these players going forward. Long term, you're going to have to save the seat. You're going to have to save your program by bringing new messengers in, by changing your approach to coaching, and by changing your approach to overall managing of the team and your message and your practices and the culture of your team. He's going to have to learn how to do that. Well, we're going to have to see, can a coach who's in his fifth year make the veteran play that we were hoping he could do in his, again, fifth year. But I think that's going to be it for us, y'all. That has been your 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And DT, my man, where can we find you?
Hey, you can find me on Twitter at dterrell, 2 R's, 2 L's, 0 5. And yeah, hit me up, shout me out. I love to talk to y'all about the podcast, talk to you about Texas sports.
And you guys can find both of us and our work on texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. That is thefootballbrainiacs.com. Again, you're listening to the Hornscast channel, which you can find on any podcasting platform out there, whether it be Spotify, Podbean, Google Play, iTunes, wherever you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. On that note, thank you all for listening. We'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.